there. Welcome to Ask the Expert on Learn TV, the show where you can connect directly with the experts to get your questions answered live. Today, we're talking about the Azure VMware solution, and I'm here with Shannon Keene. Shannon, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am excellent. It is evening time here on the East Coast of the U.S., and I'm excited to see what sort of questions we get submitted and what sort of fun stuff we have to share with everyone tonight.
I think I am too. I don't know. I think I am.
So just a little bit for introduction. My name is Jeremiah Dooley. Shannon and I both work on the Enterprise Platforms and Tools team within Azure Advocacy. So our job is to help customers who are looking at ways to use the Azure VMware solution in new ways or looking for ways to adopt it or for reasons to adopt it to begin with. And so basically we spend most of our time, and Shannon at this point spends all of her time focusing specifically on AVS, how we're going to use it, different ways that we can create content and be able to help customers get over whatever either technical or business justification or usage issues that they may be having as they deploy the product, as they use the product, as they consume the product. So pretty much our job is to help make customers more successful with all of the workloads and all of the VMware clusters that they're migrating into Azure.
You did a bang up job.
Yeah.
That's like our entire charter, right?
It is. I mean, that's our job, not just on the VMware side, but kind of across the whole Azure spectrum is to make sure that customers who have workloads that are running on-prem, the majority of which are going to be VMware related, have as much success as they want putting those into an Azure environment so that they can not only make the workloads themselves run better, you know, change the model in how they manage hardware and their relationship to hardware and those sorts of things, but then also give them that ability to be adjacent to the hundreds and hundreds of services that Azure offers in addition to AVS and allow them to take those and integrate those right directly in, kind of be a force multiplier for all of the things that the IT folks want to do with the workloads that they have running on-prem.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think some of the biggest use cases are the idea that there's a ton of technical debt, right? We can't solve for that in a very fast fashion. I wish we could. We would be magicians, I think, at this point, right? And so we finally have Microsoft coming to sysadmins and offering up a platform that sysadmins can go make use of. And the bonus, as you said, is everything is closer to all the Azure APIs. So I joke a lot. It's kind of like achievement unlocked, right? And I usually get a lot of good chuckles because that's really what it feels like. Because I've been involved in those digital transformations where it takes years and years and years and years just to get the first handful of workloads over because there's this whole analysis that has to happen. We have to understand all the different governance controls, all the different parameters in which you can deploy a VM. How much cooler would that be if we kind of shortened that life cycle and gave them a platform? So that's really what AVS helps with.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. And I think that it's one that we get pretty often, which is, you know, how do we get started? We obviously, most of the customers that we talk to have some things in common, right? They have a fairly extensive enterprise playbook, right? Comprised of their runbooks and how they respond to issues and how they deploy, how they execute on adds, moves, and changes inside their environments. They've got, it's not technical debt as much as it is kind of technical excellence. They've trained people up on this. They've documented it. Like they're using the entire VMware ecosystem. They're extending it out through things like PowerShell or things like Terraform. And they come to us and say, I'm not willing to walk away from this. And my worst case scenario is that tomorrow I have to be an admin for two different platforms. Yeah. I have to be a VMware admin and I have to be an Azure admin. And I've got to split my team or I've got to bring new people on in order to be able to handle the burden of this. So one of the questions that we get that I would love for you to talk about is how does AVS make that transition from being an enterprise VMware architect an enterprise VMware admin easier when it comes to then utilizing all of the additional services that you get access to on the Azure side?
Sure. I think of it like this. I think of it, you know, in the sense that there's always an upskilling component related to any digital transformation, whether you pick Azure, AWS, GCP, any of those cloud providers require some sort of upskilling. And that usually lends itself to a lot of an anxiety. My role's changing. Mm-hmm. I now have to support both platforms. How do I do that? And time, as you get older and older, it just runs out. So this actually helps you quite a bit because you don't have to go and retool everything related to placing your enterprise platform in Azure. All you have to understand is networking and how to give the right permission levels to that subscription, and then how to provision some sort of VM that sits behind a bastion host or another, like maybe a jump host that's locked down, only certain IP ranges can get in. It's a minimal amount of things to deploy before you have an environment that's up and functional. So to me, you don't have to deploy all of these guardrails, all these gates, all these seals of approvals. You could give your admins, especially your VMware admins, the idea that you can go spin this up very quickly, connect networking, and then it's just a matter of, it's kind of like an extra data center. So I think of it a lot of times as like a brand new colo that comes online. Sure.
Well, and as a VMware administrator, we've done that a lot, right? Whether it's standing up another cluster inside our existing data center, whether it's a secondary data center, what are the, once I get that, that cluster, once I get that SDDC environment deployed into Azure, as a VMware administrator, what's different about it than the VMware cluster that I would have inside my data center already?
Sure. The big thing is it doesn't live anywhere in close proximity to you, right? Sure. Well, I guess maybe in theory, I think we do try to pick a region that's relatively close. Right. You don't want to pick something in West Europe and you live in America, but sometimes regional constraints are a thing. So, you know, it's just a matter of picking the right region, figuring out the right way to kind of build that platform. And I don't think of it as something that's a terribly complex task too. It's something where I feel like it feels like it's a little easier to have those conversations. Whereas there were a lot of these conversations I used to have where people would just be so uptight about the idea that they were even moving themselves into the cloud.
Right.
So it's a matter of picking the region, taking the time to scale up at a time that makes more sense. That way you can continue to kind of support the same type of environment.
Right.
It lives in Azure versus somewhere close to you. But I mean, really, if you look at it, you could probably convince your VMware admins that it didn't live in Azure. That's the best part.
That's a good question. Kind of tactically, what does the tool set look like? I mean, today, if I'm a VMware admin today, I'm using vCenter, obviously, as my primary vehicle to be able to do my ads, moves, and changes, to manage my networking functions, to manage vSAN, to manage the storage presentations, policies, all of that stuff. When I move into an AVS SDDC inside Azure, what's now my primary go-to tool that I'll be using? Is it different?
No, it's almost the exact same. I feel like the only thing that might be different is you don't have root access, but that may or may not be a massive deal breaker. Think of it like Microsoft's handling all of those functions for you.
Right. Which,
to me, if I want to have less phone calls in the middle of the night, that sounds like an awesome reality. Microsoft will handle everything when that host decides it doesn't want to stay up and functional. Right. Sweet, Microsoft will deal with it. So it's the same tooling, vSphere, vSAN, NSXT. You can plug in PowerCLI if you're super savvy with PowerShell. There are BYOL components. So, vRealize Ops, you can think about plugging that in. So there's all kinds of things that really make this an advantageous idea if you are a VMware admin who's used to kind of a specific playbook. You've got your templates, you've got your content libraries. The same thing exists inside of AVS. In fact, you can extend what you're able to do by leaning on Azure Blob Storage versus having to, present a LUN to make sure that you have a content library or a spot to store your templates. So there's ways in which that you kind of can do whatever you want to. I think of it like it's sort of choose your own adventure related to what you want to do in terms of integrations. But I mean, the sky's the limit. There's really nothing stopping you from taking advantage of any of the Azure services. You're so much closer, so you wouldn't have to deal with any of the egress costs, potentially. Not every single scenario in Azure has that, but you wouldn't have that, right? You'd be sitting on the Azure network backbone. So there's a lot of really compelling things that start to change the perception of the VMware admin that's been told they have to move to the cloud.
Sure. But the good news is that that change happens at their pace.
Correct.
They can add in Azure services at their pace. If all a customer wants is VMware SDDC, right? The exact same technology, like you kind of went through the list there, but the same version of ESXi, the same version of vCenter, the same version of vRealize, the same version of vSAN, the same version of NSXT, like the same version of all of the things that they're probably running inside the data center, right? I mean, VMware, as they do with all of their cloud provider partners, like VMware has a certified level and tested level of all of those things that kind of come as part of that. If all a customer wants is a VMware SDDC, and they want to manage it just like they would if it were a colo, or if it was in a data center that was WAN connected to the environment that they're in. Yes, the sky's the limit. Yes, we have all these integrations, but the core of that is the same VMware SDDC stack.
Correct.
That they've been using. And when you and I talk at VMUGs or we talk at customer meetups, you know, we have that, we set that baseline over and over and over. It's just VMware.
Right.
It's just an SDDC. It's the same thing that you're deploying today inside your data center. We're just going to do it in a place where you don't have to be responsible for the infrastructure itself. And here's an entire, you know, hyperscaler cloud with all of the services that go along with that, whether that's infrastructure as a service or any of the higher level abstractions, that you can immediately plug right in because you have networking adjacency to them. So yeah, it's just VMware. It's all the same stuff you've been using. It's the same stuff you use in your lab. It's the same stuff I use in my lab.
It's not some crazy complicated brand new thing. It's the same thing. Right.
It is. It's fascinating. For all of you who are watching, Shannon and I have spent the last week or so actually doing documentation around deploys. And Shannon has a Learn module that she has finished up that'll get released out here. That'll get released out here shortly. Fingers crossed. But we deploy it. And you go through, and like Shannon was saying earlier, you set up your networking because there has to be a kind of a networking core inside Azure that everything plugs into. And once you get it deployed, it's both really exciting and super anticlimactic that you connect to your vCenter client and it's vCenter.
Yeah.
And
There's no trumpet fanfare. There's no, right. I mean, unless you want to. I guess you could always have that be your soundbite that plays once you log in the first time. But yeah, it's, I think the hardest part is the networking, right? Because of the fact that it sits on bare metal. So there's an express route circuit that comes along with the service.
Right.
And then you have to peer that into Azure. And then if you really want to have the full on-prem to Azure sort of scenario where you're able to use HCX and have that migrate over kind of the vMotion network, which is super awesome. When Jeremiah first told me, yes, you can vMotion VMs, I was like, why would you never want to consider, like, why you would never? And I'm just thinking to myself, all these different customers over the years who would freak out about the idea of this is changing, I don't have time to keep up. I'm like, this would be a massive game changer. You could just flip it and vMotion's up to Azure. It's great, but there's a networking component that's also involved. You know, in order to have the SLA matched by VMware, you need an express route on-prem, kind of connected into your Azure environment, and then you need to peer that in, plus enable global reach. So that's essentially how everything in Azure talks to Azure, right? It's that first express route peered into Azure, and then the on-prem to Azure, the ABS environment, it's another express route. So that's where it gets a little complicated. And I know that you know, when we think about folks that are involved with the deployment process, they usually pull a networking person in just to make sure that you account for any of the swirliness that you can account for when you do routing.
Right. But if I'm, let's say I'm a brand new, Azure customer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I've been running VMware on-prem for years. I've got a team. I have maybe already have like an M365. Like we've got some relationship with the Microsoft cloud offerings, but we've never really looked at the infrastructure as a service side of Azure proper, right? So we go through, we set up our subscription, we make sure that it's added to the service so that we can deploy an SDDC. what level of know-how do you feel like that person would need? Brand new to Azure, there's nothing in there networking wise that's already messed up that needs to be fixed or needs to be accommodated, like blank slate. On a scale of 1 to 10, how heavy is the lift to get that networking in place before you deploy that first SDDC?
I think if you've got a savvier networking guru, I don't think it's terribly difficult. The problem is introducing BGP is always a weird zero. But let's pretend that we don't have a problem. Literally setting up ABS is filling out 4 or 5 fields and literally clicking review and create and then deploy. And that's a handful of other things that you need, right? So you need some sort of jump host to access your vCenter environment. And it can be a VM that's got a public IP on that you lock down. It could be a VM that sits behind an Azure Bastion host. It really doesn't matter, but you do need a VM to be able to access the web GUI, and that's it. And that's just a matter of plugging in whatever you need to, and you see enough inside the vCenter environment that you can see where you are from a storage perspective. You can't really do too much, but right. You can see where you are from a storage perspective. Oh, I'm a little over-provisioned. I know there's ways in which they're working on making some of the kind of like for like when it comes to monitoring, but I mean, it's a pretty straightforward deployment process. 4 or 5 fields, maybe it's less, maybe it's a little bit more, nothing more than like 8. Let's start there.
Sure.
And then 2.5 hours later, approximately give or take, you've got your environment.
And we know this because, I mean, how many times have we set that up and torn that down as you're doing the documentation here over the last week?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it definitely is about 2.5 hours, maybe sometimes 3 hours, depending upon the time frame that you pick. I don't know why that's the case, but I'd say sometime between 2.5 and 3 hours. And that's just because it's going on to bare metal hosts. Like, those are your hosts. Those aren't anybody else's, right? So a lot of things in Azure are logically separate. This is 100% separate.
Gotcha. All right, well, we've got a question that came in that says, can you talk more about the access to the Azure services? What's the one of the first things I could try as an admin? So I'm guessing here, and thank you for the question, Christina. Please feel free to clarify for me if I miss this one. But I think what Christina is saying is, how do we access Azure services from an AVS deployment? So I've deployed my SDDC, I've migrated my VMs over from on-prem, I've got them running, I've got them happy. What's one of the first things that you would recommend a VMware admin look at in the Azure portfolio for something that they could try that would be immediately helpful or useful to them inside that environment?
Sure. So I would think, I think some of the biggest things would be leaning on Azure Storage outright for your content library. You don't need to give it much more thought than that. It can literally be that spot where you move all of your templates to, and that's a pretty straightforward reality. It's not terribly complex. It doesn't require lines and lines and lines of code. You can use Azure Storage Explorer. You can upload it from the portal. You can move anything over that you need to, and then from there, it's just a matter of kind of exposing it to your ESXi, well, your vSphere environment, right. And then everything can manage it from there, right? So that'd be a really good probably first start integration. Another side of it would be to spin up some sort of backup server. So you could think about leaning on Azure Backup using the Microsoft Azure Backup Server. That's a pretty straightforward deployment process, especially if you don't want to bring your Commvault or your Veritas over, but you need to protect your workloads. Because these are on bare metal hosts, you need some sort of liaison in between kind of Azure and bare metal, and the best, I guess, Azure native service would be the Azure Backup environment. So that would be another thing to lean on when we think about it. But I mean, Jeremiah, you and I, we've talked about a lot of different integrations that we could start telling the story for. So Azure Security Center, Azure Sentinel, Log Analytics, Azure Monitor. There's all kinds of neat things you could think about just from the idea of, I don't have a SIEM, I don't want to bring my SIEM from on-prem because it's pretty expensive, to I want to bring my monitoring environment over. I'd rather leave that legacy technical debt back, or what did you call it? Technical
excellence.
I'd like to leave that technical excellence on-prem because it usually comes with a cost, right?
Sure.
So why not lean on some of these Azure native services and really start to understand, could you actually make it work? And you don't have to deploy any VMs to make these integrations happen as well. Now you can if you want to.
Right.
You don't have to for every single one of them.
So here's a good one. One of the things that, I mean, so I've run VMware environments at big companies and small companies and service providers and kind of every different flavor that you can think of. And one of the things that always sits outside of the environment if you're going to have it sit outside. A bunch of this has been moved into NSXT at this point, but the firewalls always lived outside the environment, right? Every time we would deploy a VMware environment, you've got your spine and leaf architecture where you've got the network connectivity, and then at some point you've got probably a pair of edge gateways that handle all of your traffic into and out of the environment. Obviously, we're not bringing the physical firewalls, we're not bringing the big IPs, we're not bringing the whatever it is that we're using over into this environment in Azure. One of my favorite use cases for that, what can you do first when you get in there, is being able to leverage just the gigantic scale of Azure as far as it's peering out to the public internet and all of the different services, whether it's Azure Front Door, whether it's Azure Firewall, like whatever it is, to be able to handle all of the load balancing.
Yeah.
Being able to load balance individual VMs inside your VMware environment out to the public internet using an Azure native service as the gateway there. Right. You know, all those sorts of services, I feel like, are probably some of the biggest bang for the buck, because you now immediately, if nothing else, you get the, you know, the distributed DDoS protection of Azure.
Yeah.
Right. You get that the IP protection on the front end of a company with the scope and breadth of Microsoft being able to mitigate all of that before it ever gets down into your SDDC, down to any of those VMs. And that's one of those ones where the cost of it is nominal, but the impact that it can have, particularly if that's something that you hadn't virtualized in your on-prem environment, that you were still running a big pair of firewalls that are sitting at the top of a rack somewhere. That's one of those things that, in my experience with what I've seen with customers, it's a real quick return on investment to be able to say, this is what we're going to use as that edge device in order to, whether it's load balancing or proxying or just doing a straight address translation between the public internet and then any of those services that we're exposing. So that's another one that I would definitely recommend for customers to take a look at as soon as they get everything in and working.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's just like anything. You could always go into the portal first to get a handle of what you're configuring and why. And then there's ways in which you can think about applying automation. You can either provision it with PowerShell, the AZ CLI. You can build it on ARM template, a Terraform template, right? Like, it's great because you've got all of this, you have all of this flexibility. And it's up to you on how you want to build. If you want to just build it once and never touch it again, that's also fine, right? But the beauty is when you build out something that's straight, well, how about this? I use it very loosely. It is just a straightforward deployment process. Sometimes all of the weird networking nuances can totally kind of creep up and maybe frighten you or bite you a little, right? That's kind of right. What likes to happen. But, you know, you're only filling out a handful of fields. You're filling out if you want like a tag or two or some of the rules, and you're literally letting Azure do the rest. And so that's a nicer reality, whereas prior to, you'd have to go get the hardware, procure it, you know, build it, and that takes time. And then you get more and more savvy related to all the automation, you can have it, the deployment down to minutes versus potentially months, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So let's see, we got another question here. Lakshmi says, I feel like there's so much news of features and updates in all of the tech I use in the last few months. That's definitely, I definitely relate there. It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about right now? I mean, obviously for Shannon and I, there's so much of our job that focuses around just how quickly we've not just, you know, introduced AVS and the growth that we've seen in it, but we get to see an awful lot of the behind the scenes on the features and requests that customers and partners are making, and watching the engineering team kind of implement those in. There's a good balance of it's just VMware, right? It just works the way it's supposed to, but then also being able to build out things and being able to build out integrations that are useful to customers. I mean, if we look outside of, if we look outside of AVS, I think the thing that I'm most excited about from a tech standpoint right now is, I mean, I've gotten absolutely addicted to building PCs. And we had a fun little experiment today called, can I completely rebuild my entire PC before we have a live Ask the Experts, which I'm here. So it worked out pretty well. But I think the thing that interests me the most is not just the building of it, but the huge opening up of the consumer hardware market to people of all technical backgrounds. Like it used to be, if you wanted a PC built, like that was a thing. That was a heavy lift. That was, you needed to have equipment and you needed to know things. And now it's very user-friendly. It's very easy. And the kind of the advancement that the hardware companies are making in CPUs, now that we've got AMD and Intel, you know, both as options, the accessories that are out there, it's overwhelming, but in a good way, because it feels like from a creativity standpoint, you can build just about anything. Is there anything tech-wise, kind of outside of what we do for work, that has your interest these days?
Sure. So I am a DJ, and I have been DJing for, it'll be 20 years this year, which doesn't make me feel any better about my age, Jeremiah. I'm kidding. I've been getting back into it, right? So I moved last year, as did you. We were the crazy people that moved in the middle of the pandemic. We probably should have our heads checked.
Right.
And, I recently got everything set up and ready to go. So I've done a couple of streams, and I forgot how much fun that is. I don't like to be out at the clubs until 2 to 4 in the morning, right? I don't have the ability to stay out that late. Right. Usually in bed by like 10, maybe 11.
Right.
The idea of being up for another 3 hours after that, no, I'll fall asleep. But just the idea of kind of getting back into that. And then all of the cool new features surrounding all of the DSLR cameras and the mirrorless cameras that are coming out. I love to take pictures, as well as the Pixel camera. I absolutely, and you know this, we both should have that love. We love the Pixel camera. I hope they never change it. They probably will at some point, and you and I will have to start a support group. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've got the 4XL here. I've got the 5 sitting over there.
Yeah. I've got the 3XL here. That stops getting updates this year. So that means I've got to figure out if I want to go 5 or 6. I'm going to see if I can hold out until the October-ish timeframe.
Yes. If they release a 6XL, I'm in. Yeah. I can't do the little phones anymore, but if they release an XL model, I'm definitely in. We've got one last question that we wanted to wrap up here before we close out. And the question from Lawrence was, you've talked about some learning resources and documentation. Where can I find all that? Absolutely great question, Lawrence. The first place that I'll point you is kind of to all of the resources we've got that are up on the screen. So you can see the aka.ms link that's up there. All of the resources for the VMware side of things, everything that we need to have is up there. You can always go to learn directly. So that's docs.microsoft.com/learn. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of courses across all of the different product sets that are in Microsoft that you can look at there. And if you always go to aka.ms/AVS, it'll take you directly to the product page. So if you want to look at features or pricing or documentation or customer stories, all of that is always publicly available as well. So great question, Lawrence.
I was going to say one more thing. So in that aka.ms link that's shown down there, there's also the brand new VMware Hands-On Labs, which it's very hard to get folks comfortable and to understand what the deployment looks like. Well, VMware and Microsoft worked together to build these hands-on labs. It's click through and it's driven on that front. So you actually are kind of behind the scenes here, making things happen. You're building it out, and it's not really deploying because it's already been kind of pre-captured for you. But it's another great thing to take a look at.
Awesome. Excellent. So I hope that helps, Lawrence. I guess in closing, thanks for joining us today. Check out that link below. Again, you can watch this. We can watch more episodes on demand. You can find out what episodes are coming up soon. We're excited to be here. This is the sort of thing that we do kind of all day long. So it's nice to after dinner to sit down with Shannon, answer your questions, and hopefully teach you a little bit more about AVS and maybe show you some interesting ways that you can do it. So thanks for everything. Thanks for being here, Shannon. And I guess that will wrap us up for now.
Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.